Easter Sunday, April 10th, was a day of perfect beauty in the Hill Country. Everyone had been warned to be ready to go to church at 8:30, and with Lyndon driving, the Arthur Crims, Linda and George Hamilton, and Lucy and Pat, as many of us as it could possibly crowd into a convertible that had three seats, the back one designed for agreeable children or dwarfs, I believe, and I believe Jenny Thrift was with us. We drove to Fredericksburg to St. Barnabas. Wisteria and passion flower were blooming on the arbor. There stood Reverend Langford, almost 7 feet of him, smiling broadly, surrounded by his pretty small flock and a larger flock of tourists and press. There was a great deal of picture-taking as we walked in, especially of Linda and George Hamilton. I wore my Adele Simpson beige and black ensemble. Last year's beige hat. I'm really the archetype, the perfect model of that Dorothy Parker poem. Oh, bright and sparkling is my dress, and pristine is my hat. My shoes are 1958. My life is all like that. I always appreciate the members of the press who go in and attend the services. The Garnet Horners always do. A few others. Most of them linger outside. And most of all, I was delighted that Lucy and Pat went with us, although they slipped away a few minutes before the service was over to attend their own Catholic service. It's a great source of teasing for Lyndon. Have you reported to the Pope yet? The Pope has been an intimate part of Lyndon's life for years and years in the most hilarious way. And finally, at long last, we have come to know two popes. After the service, there was picture-taking for Lyndon and Linda Bird and I out in front of the church. The planting is progressing reasonably well. And then we went into the dear little log house built in the 1840s by a German pioneer family and owned by them for over 100 years until they sold it to the Episcopal Church for a mission. That is where we went to church from the time we settled at the ranch until just a year or two ago when this one was completed. Mr. Ralph Doppler, who makes models for a hobby, had constructed a very minute, detailed, excellent model of our ranch house, complete even to the eagle over the front door of the stone part. He gave it to us as we had coffee in the little log house. George was right at home, mixing with the crowds, and courteously and not aggressively, speaking to everybody right and left. I tried to introduce the girls, the Crims, all of my crowd, to as many of the old-timers as I could. Colonel Petch, of course, and Mrs. Dietz of the wonderful old bakery, and I think I saw Mrs. Fricky. And then we were loaded back into the station wagons, and Lyndon decided to take the long way home. He wanted to show Matilda Crim, whom he loves, Texas in April, some of the hill country. So we drove by Enchanted Rock, and then on to Willow City, and by the Cone Creek Road and the Grape Creek Road, seeing innumerable, marvelous pastures full of bluebonnets, lovely spreads along the road. It was a brilliant blue and gold day, hill country at its best, pink and white buttercups, wine cups, all sorts of yellow flowers, masses of wild verbena, and frequently pink phlox among the bluebonnets. These are real backcountry roads, and somehow or another, we had eluded the press. At least they were not following us within sight. Lyndon had urged them to go on home and see the Alamo. Weren't going to do anything except stay at home around the pool and enjoy the sun. Go on back to San Antonio and kick up your heels. Apparently, he had been successful. But we had an adventure they would have loved. We were on an old, narrow, worn country road, and suddenly ahead of us, I saw a rattlesnake right in the middle of the road. I said, "Hurry, Lyndon. Try to run over him," feeling quite sure he would slither off into the brush. Lyndon, whose reactions are always very quick, speeded up, and then when he got to him, put on his brakes so as to slide the car, and then backed up. We looked, and there he was, dealt certainly a lethal mauling, but he managed to crawl off into the brush. Clarence Connetch, who else, jumped out of the Secret Service car with his gun drawn and shot him. And then they took two sticks and drug him up onto the highway. He was enormous, probably 6 feet long, with a great bunch of rattles. But the interesting thing was he had just swallowed a victim, perhaps a small rabbit. Who knows? Anyhow, there was a large protuberance, as big as my upper arm, a foot or so down from his mouth. We looked at him close. He was the biggest one I've ever seen, I think. I'm sure it was because of his meal that he was sluggish and could not or did not move fast enough to get out of our way. Matilda, scientist that she is, pried open his mouth with sticks to look at his fangs, Clarence explained to her how they struck. Between yesterday and today, my bland assurance of safety, as I walk in the pastures among the bluebonnets, along the creeks over the rocks, is a little shaken. It's a chilling thought that this brute might be under my next footstep in the knee-high pasture of wildflowers. We really took the long way home, through the dance and the Reagan ranches, looking at the deer-proof fences, I ecstatic about every expanse of bluebonnets on our land. Such lovely pale pink and white primroses, or buttercups, and millions of little calico flowers, about the size of a nickel, pale yellow with a little red in them, like a colonial print on wallpaper. Lennon stopped at the Boy Scout hut, where tourists were backed up with cameras, some 6 or 8 or 10 cars of them. And he got out and shook hands with them, and they took pictures, and we all wished each other a happy Easter or a happy vacation trip. And then back to the house, starving for lunch. Earl and Wheezy and Trey Deeth joined us, Lucy and Pat and Phyllis Nugent and Bill Hitchcock. I'd had only some coffee in a paper cup as I dashed out the door headed for church, so I was ravenous. Lyndon, mindful of using every hour, had suggested the day before that we call some friends to have Sunday night supper with us. I'd asked them to come a little past 4 so that we could see the deer and the lakes and the bluebonnets. Our Blanco County neighbors, who commute from their big city homes, the John Hills, the Bill Heaths, the Wesley Wests, the Troy Posts, who were flying in from Dallas, and the Bill Bowers from Port Lavaca, and of course the Morsons. Linda Bird had left right after lunch with George, who had had a most hilarious ride. All 6 feet of him, crouched in a seat in the station wagon, better designed for a 4-foot child. He had to get back to Hollywood to start filming, so right after lunch, she'd gone to San Antonio with him in the chopper. Our guests began arriving about 4. I took them down to see the old Sam Johnson farmhouse and the Cedar House, where they could all have a place to change into slacks or get a bit of rest. And then guests and house party were off in the chopper, landing at Green Mountain Ranch, which Lyndon and A.W. have just bought. As wild a piece of country as ever I saw. Granite mountains, thickets of mesquite with yellow flowers a carpet underneath, rugged ravines, blankets of bluebonnets in valley pastures and struggling up the hillsides among the boulders. The most picturesque of the ranches I've seen yet. And as doleful a song I sang against buying any more land, I can't help but look at it with elation, although I don't see how anybody could ever make a living out of it except to shoot a Western movie on. The roads are fit only for Broncos and the sturdiest Jeeps. I got one with a top on it and real seats and grabbed Bill Heath and 2 or 3 more friends so that we were protected from the dust more than Lyndon, who never seems to mind the hottest, brightest sun and always tries to get in his Bronco the prettiest women, especially Mathilda, and usually A.W. to tell him the lay of the land. We bounced around over tortuous roads for about 1.5 hours. Twice we saw a wild turkey on his tall, stilt legs stalking off into the bee brush, down toward a stream. There were a world of deer. Every hilltop we came over, we could see some in a valley below, and we kept on shouting to each other on the intercom, 3 deer at 2 o'clock. Look over there, a whole herd at 9 o'clock. It's endlessly exciting to the Crims, and we delight in their love of the country. And the Troy Posts and Bill Bowers, less used than we are to the wildlife of this land, were thrilled. What makes hosts happier? Lyndon always likes to reach the water by sunset, so we went to the Coca-Cola Cove, where the big boat was beached, by about 6:30, and boated leisurely for about 1 hour. I spent much of my time with Bill Bower, who comes from 5 generations of sea captains and has himself had a yacht, many different yachts, for years and years. The last one would sleep 12, and he'd taken Scooter and Dale Miller and a congenial group on a Caribbean cruise. Oh, the list of things I want to do when I walk out of this job. His language is salty and his skin is like leather, and I found him a thoroughly delightful companion. John Hill, who is all of 6 feet six, or maybe even eight, is one of those many people who, having made a lot of money, wants to go to the country to live. His house, built by O'Neill Ford in Blanco County, sounds really exciting. His wife, a gentle little person with a diamond the size of a large marble, told the most amusing story about the way they travel between their homes. A sort of a convoy of several cars, including four children, two couples of help, three dogs, and an assortment of other pets. And of how some hapless new acquaintance, being warmly hospitable, had asked them to spend the night. And she said, "Oh no, you don't understand." And a very graphic description of the changes on this person's face as she explained what taking the hills in would mean. Neva has been to the greenhouse and is marvelously rested, and told me she wants to accompany her sometime. That, too, I will keep on my agenda for the sybaritic life of a later date. We were back at the headquarters, well after dark, for a good broiled steak dinner. Corn from last year's garden, enormous strawberries that Sam Ford sent us from Floresville, and a very keen feeling of gratitude for being alive and healthy and together and happy on what one of the newspaper men correctly called a perfect Easter Sunday, with sunny skies, a warm breeze, and the buttercups and bluebonnets blooming in the fields. Vicky and her date, Simon McHugh, joined us for dinner, and Linda Bird returned from San Antonio. One of the many nice things Lyndon had done today was to send a wire to Phyllis Nugent's husband in Vietnam, one Dweezy Deeth's son, Larry. She laughingly said, sent word from Vietnam to please send him some flea powder and some rubber dog bones because he had adopted a whole family of homeless dogs. Another nice moment was when little Bill Hitchcock, Lucy's brother, said to me, "This is the nearest to a family Easter I've had in years and years." After dinner, we watched the President's Country in the living room for the untold time for me and some of the secretaries, and the first time, and thrilling it is, for the Bowers, Posts, and Hills. The guests left about 10:30, and I went to bed happy. Later, I was hard put to understand Doug Kiker's story, who, after reciting what each of the three Johnson women wore, said, "As for the head of the family, he is wearing a scowl wreathed in a fit of ill temper. President Johnson is in a foul mood this Easter Sunday, apparent for all to see." I won't say I haven't seen that mood, but not this weekend. He went on to say, "Those who regularly see him face to face were particularly impressed last week in Washington by the fatigue that showed in his face. Mr. Johnson has been forced to work the late shift for days now to stay on top of Vietnamese developments. That much is true and painful and killing." The press talked, too, about how excited the young parishioners had been at the presence of George Hamilton. One story said, "There's a good possibility of George Hamilton becoming the Peter Lawford of the Johnson administration." Actually, to have around as a house guest, he's a combination of quietly deferential and charmingly articulate. Certainly handsome. But most of all, he makes Linda sparkle, come to life. For that, I am grateful.